the NFL podcast. Tweets too much about golf.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis. I come to you from a virtual room filled with some heroes, Mark Sessler, Greg Rosenthal, and sitting in on the show today, he is the star of the acclaimed instant hit micro seg, Money on Money, Matt Money Smith. How's everybody doing?
Doing well. Greg scrunched his face when I read the script, tweets too much about golf, and I feel like I'm responsible like for the content, of which I'm not.
I just read the lines
that are put in front of me.
I didn't quite get it because, you know, none of us tweet about golf. We're too smart for that.
Ever. Maybe that's the irony packed inside the... Mm.
What was that little dig there, Greg? You're too smart to tweet about golf?
Yeah, it's a boring spectator sport, and tweeting about it would be even more boring. I think we all share that.
I thought maybe it was a commentary on our colleague Adam Rank, who tweets a lot about golf these days. Or at least his Instagram is there's a lot of golf. And I, as a golfer, used to be an avid golfer, would politely disagree with Greg. I do find it to be an exciting spectator sport. But I know I'm in a gross minority.
It's popular. It's popular. I used to play. I worked at multiple golf courses as a child. And I loved playing. Nothing like, playing nine holes after you finish your shift. But it's a tough watch.
You have to make choices. Greg, like, you are allowed to bag on golf because when you were 14, you were a caddy once. So you use that a lot as your...
I played nonstop till I was like 21 or so. But yeah, at a certain point, you got to decide.
What were your jobs, Greg? You said jobs. So what were the different jobs at the golf course you had?
Well, you have to run the front desk, you know, when people come in, and then you have to wash bags. You know, when people return with the bags, you have to return the golf carts. One kid once drove a golf cart into the pool there. He got fired for that.
John Bonham,
and then sometimes if it's raining, you have to sit at the bottom of the hill and drive guys up the hill because they don't want to walk in the rain up the hill.
I mean,
so
Greg,
this is like a fancy country club.
Right. And Greg, so you retired essentially at 21. Did you mature out of the sport? I mean, people spend their lives trying to master.
I moved to New York. If you live in New York and you want to play golf, it's got to be like a huge priority in your life. You got to love it so much. It just knocked it out of me. And now you have children. Like, are you really going to say, like, I'll see you in 7 hours? It's a tough ask.
That's a tough one with golf. I was explaining
plenty
that
of dads do, but
yes, they do.
Many,
and it's not even seven, it's 10.
Right,
I gotta get up early, I gotta stretch, then I gotta play 18 holes, and then afterwards, we're playing some cards, we're playing dice or whatever. So, I'll see you at about 9 p.m., and I'll be lit to the nines by the time I get home.
But it's 2021, so you must be with your children 24/7 every single day of the year.
bad guy.
Mark's in good mood. We know he was up at 2 in the morning today.
Mark, again, I wake up this morning. I woke up pretty early. It's like, oh, man, early start today, 6:30. I can't go back to bed. I jump on Twitter, see what's going on. And I see you sending positive Nate Tice tweets at 5 a.m. And then I text that to the group and say, wow, 5:07 a.m. Mark sent this. And Mark, you replied that you've been up since 2. This is not good, my friend. And we love you very much. And this is almost... we're getting to a point where we need to have some type of intervention to get you on a sleep cycle that carries you into your old age. That's what we need.
I don't know, but intervention would suggest that I'm like doing it on purpose, but Matt Money Smith was nice enough to send some suggestions along by text, which I'm following up on. But I mean, I've been dealing with this for like 15 years, so it is what
this
it is.
This is the tough love. This is coming at you on a broadcast and saying you must clean this up because we're worried that it's going to come back and haunt you in the biggest of all spots. That's all.
Well, I'm certain it will, but
I believe this is the Circadian Rhythm podcast of record.
Right.
All right. So today's show, I hope everybody had a nice Mother's Day weekend. I hope everybody took care of their mom and the wives, because some people say, well, my wife, she's not my mother, so I don't really have to plug in on the wife, just the mother. No. You got to do both.
Good luck with that method.
Yeah. You try to go one or the other, that logic is not going to carry over. So I hope everyone that's listening to the show made the right decisions this weekend. Coming up on today's show, with the draft now a little bit in the rearview mirror, It's time to try to enter reality into the conversation of all these rookies, because if you listen to the football cognoscenti.
You know how I feel about that, Dan. You know how I
feel
about
that. You. They will tell you. They will tell you. One moment.
The G is silent in Italian. No. You know how I feel about it.
It's no, how pretentious. Let me hear it, money.
It's cognoscenti. The G is silent.
Please. Don't buy it. Don't
I feel like
it.
Pronouncing it correctly would ruin the bit, though. That's the whole thing.
That was a spicy accent.
By the way, is that Dan's bit? Is it like, is there an over under? Is there like an around the NFL Reddit that sets the over under on how many mispronunciations Dan will have in a given pod? And then they all bet. And then at the end of it, they settle up. Because that's kind of what I try to figure out. I'm like, I know he's intentionally mispronouncing some of these things.
I just
don't know how many.
Everything I'm saying is correct, first of all, including cognoscenti. Okay, so it's your opinion. Doesn't mean it's the correct one, money. That's all.
Okay, I guess that's one way to put it. I don't really have a reply. I mean, I believe it's the proper Italian pronunciation, but hey, it's all right. The
proper Italian pronunciation. What is your Italian heritage? How do you know?
Io sono studiato in Firenze per due mesi in 1993.
Hello.
Sì.
That was a hammer being dropped.
It was.
I stand down.
Backfire.
I'll never be invited back again.
Yeah. this enjoying is it. This final this appearance is it. From Matt Murray Smith. Anyway, over unders for rookies. Because, yes, as I said, a cognoscenti, they say that everyone had a perfect draft except for the Raiders. Okay. But the reality is, all these big time rookies that came to the league, some are going to have a big impact in year one, some are going to disappoint. And so we'll throw out some names, notable names, and kind of try to figure out where they might come in their first season of pro ball. Before we do that, though, let us hit the news.
You're going to hire my friend.
No, that was not Delta Burke from Designing Women. That was Peyton Manning imploring a team to hire Adam Gase.
Delta Burke. I found her very annoying. Even as a child, I could tell that she was not my cup of tea.
Yeah, well, right. Wherever you are, Delta, hope everything's going well. All right, let's get into it.
I think starting... she's passed, hasn't she?
Delta? Oh, no, we're so, playing this no. game. Hang on.
Well, total respect to her. I just found her to be a little bit too much.
Still with us, 64 years old.
Sorry, Delta. Didn't mean to.
And married to Major Payne. Was that the name of the sitcom? Major Dad?
Major
Gerald
Dad.
McRaney. All right. All right, let's get to it. Let's focus up here. Important. Eric Fisher, former Chiefs tackle, former number one overall pick. He's got a new team. It's the Colts, who signed Fisher to a one-year, $9.4 million contract. He started 113 of 117 games with Kansas City after coming into the league number one overall. Maybe money is not lived up to the standing of where his draft status was, but he became a solid starter for the Chiefs. Last year, injuries played a major factor, and now the Colts get a much-needed option there on their line in front of Carson Wentz.
Yeah, you know, we saw him twice a year. The Chargers saw him twice a year at those games that I called. And I always just thought that he was pretty average, but I think it just goes to show you that average can go a long way in the NFL. You know, my understanding is he's probably not going to be ready till October. So the Colts will probably need some sort of answer between now and then, or I should say from the start of the season until then. But look, if you have cap space and you're willing to spend the money, I think you're going to see, you know, a deal. Probably Charles Leno's going to get a deal like that. I mean, these are good left tackles, right? You know, that is hard to find. Don't the Chargers know it? What I've been looking at left tackle for 4 years. So if you can get Carson Wentz a league average or close to a league average left tackle, and it's only going to cost you a one-year deal, I would say a huge win for Chris Ballard and the Colts.
Right. And he's been better than league average for much of his career, including recent. He seemed to get better, but he's coming off a torn Achilles, might not be ready till October. And then it's Eric Fisher coming off a torn Achilles. It's my number one concern with this Colts team and with Carson Wentz in general, is he just holds the ball forever. Doesn't make a decision. That's why Frank Reich's, you know, there to get him making faster decisions. But for the first month or two, it's a bit, we've talked about how that's a bad looking division, and Eric Fisher in theory helps you for the playoffs, but they might be struggling for a while.
I mean, that was, if you look at teams that didn't do what you thought they would do in the draft, like the Colts not targeting a young tackle was one of the kind of burning voids still sitting out there. But I do find it funny that we're also, the offseason goes through these waves where we're now in a wave where we're not allowed to critique Carson Wentz. I find that it seems after last year, it's like, you know what? Actually, Carson Wentz is like, are we kind of being a little too tough on him? Like,
paging straw man.
Who said that other than man. Yeah? Who said that other than Dan? Dan's the only person.
Well, no, I mean, it's maybe it is. It's just come up on our show where I feel like it's not really. I'm not really pointing the finger at one person. It's more just like the off season does this all the time, where it's like we're not excited about the Carson Wentz signing. Now it's like, I don't know. He was really good in 2017. I mean, I was good in 2017. So I you know, a lot has changed. So we'll see.
Carson Wentz, by the way, was good in 2019.
Mark's saying that he was fell all right. Left by the way.
And I think a groupthink is a very dangerous thing, especially what we do for a living. If everyone just says, oh, Carson Wentz stinks now, I believe it's important to at least leave the option open that this fresh start with a coach that knows how to get the most out of him for a 28-year-old quarterback, it could actually go well. I don't think that's absurd to say that there are multiple ways this Wentz
I just think the groupthink is now going to go in that direction. That's what I'm saying. It's not like, you know, We'll see. These things get on my radar because it happens every
But people don't like April Carson Wentz. July. I feel like the football world doesn't not Wentz fans, and you hear a lot of things about maybe he's not the best guy in the locker room. There is plenty of reason for suspicion that this isn't going to work out. I certainly grant you that. I'm with you on that.
And there's a decent chance, by the way, like Eric Fisher is much better than half of these rookie tackles that people signed and are all excited about. Like the Bears are putting Taven Jenkins into their left tackle spot, and everyone's like, all right, that's solved, and we cut Charles Leno. It's like, well, what are the chances he's better than Charles Leno this year? Yeah. It's like 50-50, like maybe.
I would say maybe like 60-40, 70-30 that he's not. I thought Leno was a pretty good tackle.
He's
like
somewhere. He's in Washington today visiting.
Yeah, I think, and obviously, look, it's all relative, right? I mean, I spent the last year watching the worst offensive line in the league, and it all comes back to the quarterback, right? You know, Justin Herbert threw for 4,300 yards and 31 touchdowns behind the worst offensive line in the league. He was the most pressured quarterback in the league, yet he was able to put up better numbers than most quarterbacks. So, I mean, was that Tampa offensive line that good? Like, exceptional before Tom Brady showed up? You know what I mean? It's so much of it is dependent upon the quarterback. So I think for everybody that's saying, oh, once you fix the offensive line, struggles are over, dude. No, that's not the case. I mean, you still got to have a quarterback that can pull that trigger and run that offense, and that's going to go a long way in determining whether or not your O-line is good or not.
Speaking of QB drama, the Vikings, we know they took Kellen Mond, Texas A&M quarterback with a 66th overall pick. You know, when you take a mid-round quarterback, it doesn't scream QB controversy on the way with Kirk Cousins entrenched there. However, ESPN's Courtney Cronin reported that the Vikings were ready to pull the trigger on Justin Fields had he fallen to the 14th pick in the 2021 draft. He did not fall because we know the Bears traded up three picks ahead of them to take Fields, and then the Vikings pivoted, traded out of 14 with the Jets to collect some mid-round picks themselves. So if this reporting is accurate, Greg, this is spicy because now it's becoming clear now that the Vikings have one eye on 2021 with Kirk Cousins, and very clearly now an eye on the future with a quarterback position that might not include Cousins at all.
Yeah, and yet they guaranteed him money next year, which makes it complicated. I love stuff like this, just the doors not taken. I always bring up the Saints, how they were going to take Patrick Mahomes if the Chiefs didn't trade up in front of them. That's been pretty confirmed. And then in this draft, in the NFC North alone, the Lions passed on Fields. The Vikings were set to take Fields, but they weren't going to trade up for him. And the Bears are the one that gets it. So like, how does that change this division? That and the fact that it's been reported, and it's hard to confirm these things, that the Jets traded up in front of the Patriots because they were pretty confident the Patriots were going to take Elijah Vera Tucker, which is just, it's just crazy to think that the Patriots, like, quarterback of the future would not have been there because they preferred to take a guard possible tackle and Vera Tucker, and those are division rivals. So like, how does the Mac Jones Jets Patriots thing work out, and how does this Justin Fields thing work out in
sliding doors, man?
Yeah, I love it.
Well, and where Aaron Rodgers quickly shifts into drama magnet mode. You don't hear a word from Kirk Cousins because he'll happily be a good little boy through next season, do whatever they ask, and make a huge amount of guaranteed money, not just this year, but next year.
I mean, I think in terms of Mond and whether or not he's a viable, you know, replacement for the future, who knows? I mean, there's not a lot of third round starters in the league, right? We kind of know because their tails are sung so often when it does happen. So we know, you know, the rarity of which that to be the case. But I also know, you know, like getting a backup quarterback, a viable backup quarterback in one of the middle or, you know, toward, I should say one of the middle rounds, you almost never get him in the late rounds. That's important for teams. The last thing they want to do is sacrifice cash or salary cap capital on a backup veteran if they don't have to. If they, you know, like I know, again, I hate doing it, but I just get to see it so much. But like in the case of Easton Stick, I think they would have been fine had Chase Daniel not just been so affordable. They were like, oh, you know, this is a good guy for the room. But we feel like Easton Stick can come in and win a half or maybe win a game and a half and at $360,000 instead of, you know, $7 million. That's a big win for a lot of franchises. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's kind of more the thinking of the Vikings as opposed to we need to bring someone to replace, you know, Kirk Cousins.
Now, the most important person in your organization is your quarterback. And the second most important person in your organization is your backup quarterback.
Yes, and right. How many of those Cowboys seasons went totally
Mark,
south.
Will you let Greg finish his casterly bit? We all enjoy it.
All right,
Mark, here's what you got to do here. All right, now, Greg is doing his impression of me. Okay, so when that happens, what I need you to do now is you be quiet, okay? And that's first of all. And then after that, what you're going to do is Greg's going to do his impression. And then Dan is going to come in and he's going to say, hey, Greg is doing an impression of me. And then when he's done with that, then you can go.
I'll be back in about 11 minutes.
Sorry, Mark, you had what were you saying there, buddy?
No, I mean, I remember Wes and I like joined at the hip, killing the Cowboys for never having a backup in place that really could win games behind Tony Romo. And they were good teams that went totally south. So, you know, it can't be just about the low amount of earnings that they're making.
Right.
And you have,
by
to
the
have
way, they don't have one right now. The Cowboys don't have one right now after what they just went through. They have Jeff Driskel visiting on Monday and he would be easily their best backup, which is terrible.
In other news, the Broncos, they are obviously in the news right now, connected to Aaron Rodgers with all the Rodgers drama. James Palmer, NFL Network Zone, reported today. The Broncos have had plenty of internal discussions about the possibility of making that happen. But for the here and now, it's Drew Lock and Greg's boy, Teddy Bridgewater, and they need an offensive line in front of whoever the quarterback is. They won't have Juwan James, it looks like, whose star-crossed career took another bad turn. Last Tuesday, team sources confirmed that James suffered a torn Achilles tendon in a workout away from the Broncos facility. There's some talk whether it's season ending or not. We're not clear, but either way, it's a very serious injury. He opted out of last season. He was injured before that. Since signing a 4-year, $51 million deal in March of 2019, he's played 63 snaps. Oof. Yikes.
Yeah, I guess I'll start. It's probably the worst free agent contract we've seen in years, right? I mean, 63 snaps, 50 million, 20 something guaranteed. It'll be interesting how the Broncos opt to play this. And I think so much of this, you know, I think fans tend to focus on the player or they'll focus on the team, and rarely do they focus on the agent. And to me, this is a great disservice done to the player by the player's agent. Now, I'm not privy to those conversations. But I do think in the case of some of these players, guys opted out, you know, maybe in some cases for health concerns, but I think in other cases for registering a year on that deal in which there were going to be 4 games played or 6 games played. And that could be someone that is dissuaded. Hey, look, we feel like you're going to get the whole season in 2020. That's going to roll over. So let's sit this one out. And then next year you can make your $12 million because we're probably going to get all 16, now 17 in. If that was the case, my goodness, you know, what a bad situation Juwan James has been put into. And I guess my understanding is he was working out at the facility. That's why I think it's so interesting with how the Broncos are going to treat this, right? You know, it's one thing if he's like, oh no, I'm one of these veterans. I'm going to heed the call of Tom Brady and stay away and stand united, not come in at all. Then you get hurt. I wouldn't be surprised if the Broncos go, we're done. You're not getting a cent. We don't owe you any of that money. You were hurt off premises. Or because he has been coming in occasionally, if they will honor that contract. It's gonna, I think it's gonna be spicy.
I mean, they'll face like a legal battle. There's a lot of talk. The Broncos may not give him his money. We'll see. I sort of don't want to like kill him before they go ahead and do that. I wouldn't be surprised if they just do give it to him. And this Tom Brady, like trying to keep everyone out of the offseason workouts, we'll see how that works. Like, it didn't work at all for the first three rookie minicamps. None of them listened. All the rookies showed up for the first three or four teams. So at least the rookies are not listening to this veteran idea to not show up at the facility.
Right. Or players that, you know, need to impress a coaching staff versus sight unseen sitting home or operating elsewhere. I mean, one little note to Aaron Rodgers. I mean, this was PFF's 25th ranked offensive line a year ago. And, you know, Juwan James wasn't there, but they don't project to look a whole lot better this season. They're talking to Dennis Kelly, apparently, to maybe come in and fill, you know, help out at tackle. What if I took the Juwan James approach to this podcast, opted out of an entire season last year, leaving you guys to do all the work, and then, you know, got sort of maybe a cough or cold and said, I'm not coming back this year. And then everyone's like, will NFL.com pay Mark his, you know, meager salary or not? High drama. Not,
I could give
not
you an answer
on the website.
I think would, I know what the NFL would do.
I think that would make football morning in America.
Speaking of FMI,
can I, actually, you know what? Can I jump back into that real quick, Dan? Something that Greg said I think is important. You know, and look, we're all subjected to hero worship at times, and we have to abide by it because of what these players mean to the league. But you know, to me, it's so irresponsible of Tom Brady. I'd like to run that call and to be that emphatic about how you. I don't think people know kind of how much these guys make. You know what I mean? Like, that you're talking about players, you know, 54 through 90, that if they show up at these voluntary workouts, everything's taken care of, all of their meals, all of their training, they get a per diem, you know, so like people don't realize they get paid per day that they show up. So either they're working out on their own because, like Greg said, they're trying to make the team, they're on the, you know, they may or may not make the team. Well, if you do it at the facility, you're making like $300 a day. So if you're someone that's a fringe potential NFL player or practice squad player, and you're trying to make that practice squad, if you don't go in, you're losing about $1,000 a week to $1,500 a week that you're putting in your pocket for just showing up at the facility and working on. Not to mention everything's paid for when you go there.
And that's just the financial side. These guys are chasing the dream. Yeah. You know, they have an opportunity to be in this building of this professional team, turn some heads, make relationships. I'm totally with you. Brady exists in a whole. He's a two percenter within this NFL world, and he can't just speak for everyone.
But is there a point from another angle on that? I totally agree with you with that. If they're going to stage it, those marginal players need to be there for everything that you mentioned. But wasn't Brady's point a little bit that he's sort of saying you don't have baseball players throwing 90-mile-an-hour fastballs like in, you know, the middle of winter when baseball's not happening? That maybe it's a tone down to some degree of the structure of the offseason.
Haven't they done that?
They're not doing that.
Before the CBA. Like, why are we?
You're right. You know? Yeah, you're right, Mark. I mean, but, you know, again, they show up, they watch film, they work out, they do breakout meetings, they go on the field in shorts. They're almost never even in shells in these, and they're doing walkthroughs. And then maybe they're doing a little bit of work. But like the idea that Brady would drop that nugget to the public that these guys are doing what's the equivalent of a pitcher throwing a 95-mile-an-hour fastball for 70 pitches on a day in January, that's just irresponsible. That's not what they're doing in these, you know, OTAs and these rookie camps. That's just not what's happening.
John Elway's looking at this and like, we don't have to pay some of the money I like burnt trying to fix this offensive line for 6 years. Great. No one's paying attention to that anymore. Like, right. That was the biggest sinkhole in the NFL, their offensive line.
Speaking of football morning in America, Brandon Bean, the Bills general manager, spoke with Peter King. And there is a report that the league is primed to set a threshold 85% vaccination rate amongst players for teams to conduct traditional meetings and practices in 2021, which is obviously an advantage to be able to prepare for a new season at that level. And Bean told King that it would be an advantage to hold those meetings and have those practices. And it might make a roster decision easier for him based on who is vaccinated and who is not vaccinated. And Mark, this opens up a whole can of worms, obviously, a national discourse about vaccinations and who has to get one, who must get one, who gets the choice, all that. That is going to connect to the NFL, I think, in a big way this summer.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't have a huge hot take on this. I think from one angle, Bean is talking about, like any general manager or executive inside the building on the football side of operations, competitive advantage. You don't want to lose the chance to gather if you can. But, you know, this is a personal choice. 85% is even sticks out to me as an interesting number, because what are the other 15% doing on that front? Again, I don't have a hot take on it. I'm getting vaccinated and I'm not telling anyone else to do anything. But the other 15% seem to be a talking point inside a locker room to begin with.
Right. I mean, Brandon Bean was kind of asked about this, followed up from Peter King, because he already said, like, I'd cut a guy, you know, he said the quiet part. He said the part like, of course they would cut a guy if like things are close between two guys towards the end of the roster and you're trying to keep everyone safe. That's going to be a factor. Most other GMs probably would just, you know, quietly do it. And it's only going to be for guys who are kind of marginal anyways. Stars aren't going to be cut based on their medical preferences with the vaccine. They're not cutting Tom Brady about this. And he said the quiet part out loud, but it's like, I don't know. Like it's just like last offseason where we said the world is coming to the NFL. That like everything that we're struggling with in our work lives and everything is going to affect the NFL too. And this is a good example of that. Like, you know, our country, you know, is going to have so many people that don't want the vaccine, and the rest of the world's kind of looking at like, what the hell's wrong with you? You guys are smart enough to have all the vaccines. Like, why aren't you taking them? And there's going to end up being repercussions, whether they like say it out loud or not.
Yeah. To me, I'm with you, Greg. It's a non-story. I think it's obvious. And, you know, the anti-vaxxers can have their way with, you know, however you want, but whatever, it's a business. You know, if you feel like this is the best way to operate your business because you want to have 85 or 100% vaccine in your facility, then do it. You don't like it, don't work for them. You know, go work for someone else. Go work for the Eagles. Go work for the Ravens or whomever else will bring you in if the Bills aren't willing to employ you. And if none of them are, whatever, go work somewhere else. You know, it's people mistake rights for privilege. You know, these are independent, privately owned businesses. And that's the reality to me. I know it's not popular. I get it. I don't get, I'm with you. I don't want to put words in your mouth or try to put you on the anti-vaxxer position. I'm not trying to take some sort of political stance, but to me, I think it's just a guy.
I mean, I'm fine.
That is Greg's stance.
Yes, that is 100% my stance.
It's mine too.
I mean, and there's different forms of privilege. Like LeBron, according to Dennis Schroeder in some, you know, German interview, like him and LeBron were the only two guys that haven't been vaccinated on the Lakers, and Schroeder's out now after, you know, getting the disease. Like that's the privilege of being LeBron. Like if you're a starter making a ton of money, you might have the privilege to have that decision. But if you're, it's kind of like guys who get arrested and stuff, like you don't have the like those guys end up losing their jobs if you run afoul of the law. And this is similar.
Do we know if Tom Brady accepted the vaccine? Because he seemed to eschew the concept of wearing a mask the entire season, and he's out there whipping the ball around in a park, you know, when everyone else is in their house.
To connect.
Hey, why you got
to
bring up old S, Mark, huh? Why you got to bring up old S?
plenty of dots to connect on Tom Brady if you care to in those realms. All right. In other news, Mark, who is Tim Tebow?
Well, he's many people. He affected our lives when he did the football version of Tim Tebow with a multitude of teams about 10 years ago. And Dan and I were charged with, I am not exaggerating. There was a stretch of time where Dan and I were literally charged with writing 10 plus Tim Tebow articles a week. Mine involved him dating or wanting to be dated by various Kardashian sisters. There was a Katy Perry thread in there, something to do with someone else. And Dan and I would tally how many Tebow articles we did each week. And whoever wrote more would get the first round of beers for free at the the old tavern up the street.
The breaking point for me was, the breaking point was he ended up on my team and it was a horrible situation. So that was bad. But the breaking point for me as a professional NFL media was having to work one Easter morning and I'm in the newsroom and I'm, you know, I got my eye out. What's going on in the league? It's a quiet day. It's Easter Sunday. And then a furious shadowy league figure calls, ready to fire my ass because I had yet to write a post about Tim Tebow speaking at some Christian gathering in front of 50,000 people or something. I think Daniel Jeremiah's dad was involved.
I think it was his thing.
Yeah. It's like, and there was a fury that I had yet to write a story about this church event, which I guess I was like, oh, I guess I blew that one. And I was like, this is horrible. And I don't want this to happen anymore in my life.
I think Tim Tebow landing spots was the first article I ever wrote at NFL.com.
It was, Greg, on an airplane you wrote.
He was getting replaced by, who was he getting replaced
by? Peyton Manning.
I should remember this, Peyton Manning, of course. Right after free agency. It was like the reaction to Peyton Manning signing there. Yikes.
I give John Elway credit for this. And everybody who listens to the show knows I could be critical towards John in his handling of the Broncos, especially in the last 5 years or so. But at the height of Tebow mania in that 2000, I guess it was 11 season, when everyone was going crazy and he was having those wild finishes to the game, and then, of course, the playoff win over Pittsburgh and all that mania with the 90-yard touchdown, Elway never bought in. Even in the press conferences, he never gave the people what they wanted, which was for him to say, he's our future, he's our team. Elway always knew. I wonder what happened to that guy.
I have three nuggets on Tebow that I'll share. One is, and I don't know if these are in, well, I think they're in chronological order. I was calling before I got the Chargers gig. I used to just call, you know, game of the week on the radio. So I would be in whatever NFL town calling a game. I was doing a Packers Broncos game and I was on the field at Lambeau and I was watching Tim Tebow warm up. And I have never seen in all my years of calling football, college or professional, such a poor throwing warm up. Like, I was in disbelief how badly he was missing receivers. And like, it really was. It was like beyond comprehension that, like, wait, this isn't NFL. And you're watching the receivers just kind of getting all pissy as they're running their routes. That's one. Two, I called the Broncos Bears game that Caleb Haney started for the Bears, in which the Broncos won in overtime. I had to catch a flight out of Denver that night. I think it might have been Tebow's first start, or it was an early Tebow moment, whatever the case. Before I called NFL games, I used to call college football games. So I'd been in some of these massive, like I've called Tennessee, Alabama. I mean, I'm talking giant 90,000 SEC fans freaking out, pouring out of the stadium, celebrating in the streets for hours on end. That win over the Bears is the closest thing I have ever experienced in the NFL to a college atmosphere. Mm. If you've ever been to Mile High, you leave the stadium, and if you go up on the hill, it's this strip of bars. You couldn't move a car. I couldn't get to my flight. I had to spend the night in Denver. I could not get out because people had just poured into the streets to celebrate this regular season win over the Caleb Haney-led Bears, authored by Tim Tebow. And then my third nugget is, of course, he played second fiddle to me on the successful single season network show Million Dollar Mile on CBS was not renewed.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. Wow.
So Tebow
and I were tight.
You guys worked together.
Worked together. We'd spend 18 hours a day together on set for about 3 weeks straight. I don't know if I've ever met, like, he's as nice a person as you've ever been around in your life. As you know, could not be more happy that I was able to spend those 3 weeks with that pleasant young man.
Do you still like text once in a while about various items?
Is he in your phone?
He's in my phone. Yeah. I do not text him though.
Did you tell him that he had the worst pregame warm up you've ever seen out of a quarterback? That
you know what's funny? Believe it or not, I don't know if I said it exactly, but I kind of alluded to it. He's got like this great self-deprecating sense of humor, believe it or not. Like I'd mentioned something to that. I wasn't that abrasive. I just said, hey, I called that Bronco Packer game. I was watching you warm up. He's like, yeah. I took a circuitous route to get to that point, and it was a very gentle point I made.
Anyway, like with all that said, and you know, I feel like it's a whole episode just talking to Money about his Tebow experience. But Tebow's back in the NFL. This is pretty nuts to me. He's 33 years old now. He just spent the last 4 or 5 years in the organization of the New York Mets in Major League Baseball trying to make it as a pro. and he hacked it down in the minors and went through the grind of the minor league season, which is not glamorous on any level. And this is a millionaire athlete. It didn't work out. And now Urban Meyer is bringing him to the Jacksonville Jaguars, where he's going to get a chance to try out as a tight end. Now, Mark, the quarterback dream is dead. Can Tim Tebow make a team? Let me tell you their depth chart right now. At tight end, our boy, Chris Manhertz, Luke Farrell, Tyler Davis, James O'Shaughnessy, Ben Ellefson, all on the depth chart. Tebow, does he have a shot?
I mean, he could make it based on the fact that Urban Meyer seems to love him. And, you know, to Money's point, people that, you know Tim Tebow, and away from some of the, you know, media critique, say the same thing. And this is a young team with not a lot of, you know, major veteran leadership. So, I mean, from that angle, I would say yes. Can he still play? Can he play tight end? I mean, he is an incredible athlete, and he maybe still has those skills. I mean, I'd want to see him play before I can say yes or no. But from a person angle, I think they're not bringing him in without a real chance of him being on the roster. Mm.
I think they're bringing him in like most 34-year-old veterans that get signed this time of year, as a camp body, maybe a little bit of a favor in this case. And his chances of even being ahead of O'Shaughnessy for the fourth or fifth tight end spot are slim to none. There's very little reason to think he would be remotely athletic enough to play tight end. Like, it's,
Greg,
it's hard to
Greg,
play tight
why
end.
Why bring
it's hard
Tim Tebow to your organization?
Because you,
just
because
a,
you love the
name
man,
alone creates a
love the
a
man
stir.
And he's in shape. And it's like, what's the 86th roster spot to Urban Meyer? Sure, give him some time in May through August, and the odds, you know, the overwhelming odds are, and then you say goodbye.
8 years ago, I would have said, oh, this is also a needless distraction in that building. But that's a Tebow mania, I feel like, is from another era. I think it's going to be a story. I think it's going to be a part of this camp with Trevor Lawrence in the building, but I don't think it's going to take over the team the way it maybe would have once upon a time. See what happens.
To me, I think there's a couple things. One, you know, I don't know if the Jags need publicity in Jacksonville. You know, I'm not quite sure. I would assume after Trevor Lawrence, you've got everything you need, right, to try to stoke the fire in that fan base.
They've struggled to sell tickets. Obviously, right? Lawrence helps, but more than most franchises, that's fair.
Yeah. So, to me, that's, you know, I think it's worth it. To me, it's more financial as opposed to football. The one thing I would say that I didn't add from, you know, I think I called two or three of his games, but it's like the Beatles. Like, at least at that point, it was not that I was alive when Beatlemania was taking over, but you see the film of it. That's what it looked like. Like, when you came out of the tunnel, they had this group, and I had never seen this for any other team before, but they had a group of what I would say was probably 200 to 300 people that would come on the field and sit in this one particular area that were just there for Tebow. They were not there to watch the Broncos warm up. They were not VIP. This was a Tebow-centric group, and I think that's what you invite, right? You invite all these people that, and again, financially it's great, but from a football standpoint, when you're warming up and you're trying to get ready to play, you know, this game that's tough enough as it is, and you've got 200 people standing on the field that have paid for this premier experience with this individual that may or may not have a huge impact on the game, I think that's asking, you know, that's asking a little bit from the rest of your roster, right? To embrace Tebow mania going into a seat, because it's going to be there and it's going to be at every spot.
But
you
if you're especially like fourth round pick Jordan Smith, you're like, please give me a rep against Tebow and let me wipe the floor with this guy, this fool, please.
And finally, in the news, the NFL will release its 2021 schedule on Wednesday, and you can check that out right here on NFL Network, and there on NFL Network, and ESPN2 has it as well. Contractually obligated to mention that. What do you guys, if you had the power to pick the opening game, I'll start with you on this one, Mark. If you had the power to choose what is the Thursday night opener, what's the matchup you want to see?
All right, so looking at all their home and away opponents, so you got to go. The problem is they're away against the Patriots.
So you're saying they, Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, yes. I mean, get the game, obviously, right? Otherwise, what are we doing
Super Bowl
here?
Champion.
But they play in New England, so that is tedious because that wipes out what would easily be my number one pick. There's a very clear second for me. Don't give me Bucks Saints. First of all, that is highly annoying. Give me the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at home against the Buffalo Bills.
Yep, I think that's the choice. I agree. Saints feels like it's almost as likely. I don't think they want to. They wouldn't do the Cowboys or the Giants. I don't think. If anything, because it's like the kickoff's going to get great ratings anyways. Let's save that Cowboys game for another time. The Bills are sort of the perfect compromise, the perfect marriage. They're the best team possible, and they're also like, you know, a smaller market. It's a matchup you wouldn't be used to seeing. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I think I just wonder if that's too early for that game, right? I mean, a potential Super Bowl preview, you would think they'd want that maybe a little bit later. I mean, like you said, they're going to get ratings anyway, right?
It feels like it could be Saints with Jameis and everything, but I'm with Mark. The Bills would be
I don't think Jameis is like a big national selling point. I don't know.
Oh, no,
like,
you know, not at all.
You know? I will say this, and I know they like to have it, obviously, in the building of the defending champion, so maybe this
right.
throws it out. But I will throw this one out because I know this is an important facility in our league. And I know this is a big market. We should check that box. What if Tampa Bay went to L.A. to play the Rams in the full house at Inglewood? Matthew Stafford's first game. Site of the Super Bowl. They kind of got robbed of opening that stadium the right way in 2020 because of COVID. This would be a way to kind of sell the whole experience and what it means. I'll throw that one out. And a good game. And a really good game.
But the Bucks would totally revolt. What was the year? Was it the
Well, they just got the Super Bowl in their building, so you know.
I know, but remember when the Ravens had to after they won the Super Bowl had to open? I think it was against the Broncos, and I think Joe Flacco threw like 55 passes in this game. But they had to open on the road, if I'm not mistaken, because the Orioles were like home on the same.
Peter Angelos, the owner of the Orioles, would not move a game. And it stuck it to the Ravens. It sounded like some like rich guy fighting that we were just privy to.
Exactly.
Plus there was like, not that it's a reason to do it, but no player or team has ever owned another team over the course of the amount of time Brady was in New England as Brady and the Patriots did Buffalo. Like statistically, no one beat up on one other franchise enough. So it'd be a nice little like, hey, we can get back at you. Even in Brady's last year, the Bills had a chance to win the end and didn't come up.
To me, it probably comes down to the Cowboys and the Bills, right? I mean,
I feel like it'll be the Giants and the Bills. I feel like they don't like to use their best things.
They're Cowboys,
Cowboys makes a lot of that. If I were a betting man, which I am not, especially in matters related to professional football, Cowboys at Bucks, that brings the ratings in a bit.
Well, we're doing a reaction show, by the way. We're doing a Wednesday night show. We're changing our schedule this week. We're so big on the schedule release this year.
Oh, we love it. We love it.
They rolled out Vikings Saints as an opener, you know, following that NFC title game. So they don't always save, you know, the best matchup.
Right.
That's what's happening in the news. All right. So we're caught up on the news. Now let's get caught up on, you know, where are these rookies, these high-profile rookies, how are they going to come out of their rookie seasons? This is kind of silly, obviously, because you can't really know how these guys are going to play. Look at the quarterback that you just studied, Money, for an entire season as the voice of the Chargers. Nobody thought Herbert was going to do what he did, so that's part of the fun.
Jeremiah ranked him below Ross Blacklock, the Texans defensive tackle, you know.
Greg plays the hits, you know. That is Wonderwall by Oasis.
Every time I see like a nugget about Blacklock, I'm just like, well, DJ had him 19th, Herbert was 20th.
You know, the best quarterback. Greg likes to play the thing like, oh, I like feuding with people because I don't take it seriously. But then you see the stuff where he always brings up DJ and how he missed on Darnold and how he's bringing up the Justin Herbert thing constantly. This is your way of seriously sticking it back to DJ for his little fun social media.
Very spiteful.
I mean, I just would think it'd be awkward that he has to now work with Herbert for the next decade, like this amazing quarterback. It's like, yeah, I thought you were like as good as like a backup, you know, defensive tackle.
Or Justin Herbert or the 20th
player in the draft.
Bring it up every show.
Yes. Or he thought he was the 20th best player in the draft, which I would say is quite a compliment. right? For someone that was operating in a run first offense and a head coach that was terrified to have his quarterback take chances.
Well, he's lucky Tom Telesco didn't see him as a top 20, as the 20th best player. That's for sure.
Ain't that the truth?
So let's, since we're talking quarterbacks, let's start with pick one. Pick one of 259, Trevor Lawrence. Really interesting to imagine where the Jaguars end up this season if they get legit quarterback play, which is in line here, potentially. So let me throw this out as a rookie season for Trevor Lawrence, and you guys tell me, over under, is this in the ballpark in your mind, or is this way out of line? First of all, he's starting. I'll say 16, 17 games, 16 and a half games. All right. 28 and a half touchdowns, 13 and a half interceptions, 4,200 yards, 95 passer rating. Am I crazy? Is this too optimistic? Or should we look at him as emerging as something close to a star, something Herbert-esque right out of the gate?
I'm going under with those numbers. I mean, expecting, and those are similar but a little lower than what Herbert did last year. That's a lot to ask. I mean, even Joe Burrow, who was playing pretty well last year, wasn't going to get to those sort of numbers. And I still have questions about how this Urban Meyer thing goes and the talent around him in Jacksonville. It's not like they're loaded there. I don't think Lawrence is landing in an amazing situation. I think he's landing in a pretty typical situation for a number one pick.
I don't know. I mean, Baker Mayfield started fewer games, threw 27 touchdowns, had 14 interceptions and 3,700 yards. So if you're giving an extra game, 16 and a half starts you gave him to Trevor Lawrence, I think you're in the ballpark, and I wouldn't have a problem with over with the way that the NFL operates offenses right now.
Yeah, I think I'd lean under. I feel like Herbert's season was such an outlier, in terms of just those numbers. We don't see them, and I think in terms of Urban, he's such a, he is such a maniac for winning. And I could see him trying to minimize mistakes that are inevitably going to come with rookie quarterbacking, no matter how good a prospect they are. Because, we saw that in a lot of those Charger games. As great as Herbert was, late game situations tended to get away from him a little bit. And a lot of that could be because the defense wasn't playing well and maybe he felt like he had to do too much. But they don't have a good defense in Jacksonville. I don't think they have a great offensive line in Jacksonville. So I could just kind of see Meyer trying, especially in that division, right? Kind of being able to envision, I know we don't have the roster right now, but maybe this thing's gettable at 8-8.
He's talking about running the ball a lot, that's going to keep the numbers down. But
what if we move Tebow? Yeah. Forget about this fullback nonsense. Why don't we just move him to right guard and just see how that goes? Have him drink a bunch of shakes, get him up about 100 pounds, and let's fly.
Plug him right in.
Text him right now, money. See if you want a roster spot, maybe offensive line.
I mean, if you have not, it sounds like you haven't texted Tebow in quite a while. That would be an odd way to get back in touch with him. But
if you type in Tebow on your phone right now, money, does it bring up the most recent text? And how long ago was that?
It does not. Wow. What's funny is I don't see it in here.
Ooh.
Tebow's blocked money.
Maybe he was able to send some sort of electronic pulse. Zapped his contact from my.
By the way, when I was setting that line for Lawrence, I did go back and look at what Andrew Luck did, which is interesting because everyone says that Lawrence is the best prospect since Luck. Surprisingly, and it's a bit of a different era at this point. This is 2012, but 23 touchdowns, 18 interceptions, completed just over 54% of his passes, passer rating of 76.5. They went 11-5 though.
Did a lot of good things doing it. And that's the type of thing where I think that's a realistic expectation. Lawrence could look really good and still his numbers might not be.
I guess part of the reason I didn't set it in that area, Greg, is I know the game is played differently now and it's more offensively inclined. Justin Fields. Let's hit some of these quarterbacks. Justin Fields, I just want to talk about playing time here. 12 and a half starts. He is, of course,
way too low.
First round pick of the Bears. Andy Dalton is in the building.
Easy over.
I agree.
I thought that sounded about right. I can absolutely see them starting Dalton for three games before pulling the ripcord.
We do this every year. What week will quarterback X start? And the conservative approach is always week six, week five, and then the team gets its butt kicked in week one, and bang, that guy's in there in week two. No one has a patience for 50 days of Andy Dalton, I promise you.
I think the difference with Fields is just his disposition, his leadership. Like, that's some of the things that really make him special. You hear the way teammates gush about him. So I just think Andy Dalton can't overcome that. To me, he goes into that building. He takes over that team. He takes over that quarterback room. He becomes their savior and their leader of this new era of Bears football. And I think they're just, to me, the coaches, they'll have to go with him. I think he will inspire confidence in that team that Andy Dalton just simply can't.
All right, you've convinced me
so far. Yeah.
I'm going over. The two of you have convinced me.
Yeah, right. I'm kind of with you. I think all that was well said. I'll hit the over there too. Here's a tougher one. Trey Lance, I got him at 8.5 starts.
I'm going over.
Jimmy Garoppolo in the
building. The more I've thought about this, the more I think he's got a real chance to start week one, and that it'll be sooner than later. I think it's all going to be up to him. If he looks awesome and he's picking up the offense and he gives Kyle Shanahan some different options, I think he's got a chance to play early.
I'd be interested to hear what Money has to say, because, I mean, from a college angle, he's a little bit of an outlier in terms of how many passing attempts he had in college. So it's like, but you hear that he's, you know, incredibly like intellectual pre-snap, all there mentally. So if he's able to do it, I would go over, but I would always go over in these situations with the rookie quarterbacks, because I just don't think you go get this guy and do what you did without thinking in your mind, there's a great chance he starts 14 or 15 games for us.
Yeah, I'm with you, Mark and Greg. I think he starts. You know, because, and look, what is Shanahan so good at, right? It's disguising, it's winning the play before the ball is snapped. And like you said, I mean, what you hear about Trey Lance is just such, you know, a smart guy, someone who's able to diagnose, was asked to do that, to check in and out of plays from the quarterback position, even though it was at North Dakota State. I would be really surprised if he didn't start. I've got to believe they're still crossing their fingers that there's a way to move Garoppolo, that they can get, you know, recoup some of that draft capital they lost from a desperate team that unfortunately sustains an injury in training camp or preseason. So I think you can design it, right? You can kind of do what the Bills did with Josh Allen, where you don't have to throw.
He's
the
done
ball
it before.
Game. Yeah, exactly. He's done.
I
it
think
before
that's sort Griffin. Of been lost on this that, you know, when I was thinking of was when I was calling Herbert the best rookie season of the last two decades, number two is probably RG3 that same year with Andrew Luck. And that's Kyle Shanahan. That, you know, he threw 20 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, rookie of the year, RG3 with Shanahan. If he can do it for RG3, I got to think he's ready to do it.
I wonder if, because I think we're all in agreement that the 49ers have a chance to be very good this season, and it's not all on the quarterback. It's because it's a well-rounded roster. They got killed by injury setbacks last season. And you would think, with steady quarterback play and all these other pieces, that they can win a lot. I just wonder if they decide to open the season with Garoppolo and cite in part that Lance has such little background in playing in general, even going back to college, that if they get out of the gates fast and they're 5-1, they might not be like in a rush to put in the kid. And then when they hit turbulence around midseason, or Garoppolo gets hurt, which is always a factor here, then Lance gets there. I think they're going to play or start a similar amount of games. That's just a hunch I have. But
I would just quickly push back on the they're going to be exceptional. I don't know what that defense is going to look like. You know, they got rid of Buckner. That was the wrong call. You know, I don't think Armstead's been as good without him. I think, you know, Kinlaw was average, you know, to just maybe even below. He started to come on a little bit toward the end of the year, but that didn't seem like an adequate replacement for Buckner. And that was a strength, man. They got that push up front, and that was just kind of what caused everything else to operate. Everybody celebrated Robert Saleh for being the brains behind that defense and coordinating that defense. He's gone. I don't know what his replacement's going to look like. The secondary was beat to hell.
They look pretty rough in the secondary. They're now supposedly talking to Richard Sherman. That looks like their weakness, but they coached them up. I mean, they didn't have Nick Bosa last year. They didn't have a lot of their best players, and they coached them up. I kind of think maybe the scheme and the system prevails there, even without Saleh.
All right. Fascinating team, the Niners. Moving on, Kyle Pitts. They say the best prospect, tight end prospect, maybe ever. Hamana.
Over.
Enters an offense with stars at wide receiver and Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley, a former MVP and Matt Ryan with someone to prove, and an offensive coach that everybody loves in Arthur Smith. With that said, Kyle Pitts as a rookie, 71.5 catches, 1,100 yards, 7.5 TDs. Hit it. Ooh.
Obliterates the rookie tight end record by like triple. My God.
Well, man. This is a generational all-time prospect entering an excellent offensive situation.
I got to pull up what Darren Waller had last year in one of the great tight end seasons, because I think that might even be close to better than what Waller had.
All right.
It'd be a lot to ask. I was ready to go over for anything because I just want to believe in this in Pitts, and I'm buying the hype. Arthur Smith's tight ends, for what it's worth, you know, didn't put up huge numbers in Tennessee, even though he certainly got him a lot of touchdowns.
Well,
that feels a little too rich, even though I was ready to go over. I guess I'm going to have to go under.
Ugh. By the way, one of the best rookie campaigns by a tight end ever was Mike Ditka, who had 1,076 yards and 12 touchdowns. Ooh. I mean, you look across the board, most other rookies, and I know this is sort of a trope, but there's a truism behind it. The rookie tight ends just don't produce that way. So
he's not a normal tight end, to be fair. I think he could get to 900, 1,000. So if you had put it right a little lower, I might have taken it.
I'd go under, but I think that he's going to be different. I mean, there's no question about that.
So last year, Waller, who is very, I think that's the closest comp, right? It's just an impossible cover. He almost operates like a wide receiver as opposed to a tight end, just so athletically gifted for his size. Last year, Waller did 107 catches for 1,196 and 9 touchdowns. But again, he was targeted 145 times. I didn't look it up. I would guess the next highest targeted receiver was probably Aguilar at like 85 targets or something like that. I mean, right. Carr was That's all about. So you got Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley. I just don't, man, that seems high to me.
If Julio Jones is still in the building,
yeah.
If he's moved, that could open up a lot of targets. How about Najee Harris? Okay. New Steelers running back. He's going to be locked and loaded and be a big part of that offense you'd expect as a first-round pick running back. James Conner is in Arizona now. I'll set it at 1,100 total yards and 7.5 touchdowns.
Well, I'll go over. I'm sure fantasy people who were like all down and like, don't waste a first-round pick on a running back. Oh, that lasts as long as you're in your fantasy draft and you're like, who else is getting 325 touches in the NFL? Najee Harris to me was on a short list, so I'd go over him and Pitts. I think have a decent chance to, you know, be underdog offensive rookie of the year guys, even with all these quarterbacks.
I'll go over too, because I mean Jonathan Taylor surpassed the numbers you mentioned last year, and I think they're going to use him all day long starting right away. And I think that, you know, you could also examine what the over under would be in terms of receiving yards, because he's a dual threat, and so I think he has a great chance to be rookie of the year.
I'd agree. You got to protect Ben. He can barely move. Hand the ball to the guy a lot. A lot of those smoke routes. Just, you know, I agree. I think he's going to end up, you know, the one thing about Taylor is that he was behind the best offensive line in the league, you know, and I think the Steelers look like they might have one of the, 10 worst at this point. So that'd be the only concern, especially for someone that was running behind the offensive lines that he's been running behind his entire, you know, time in college. At the same time, there's like a flip side of that, right? Alabama's got this great offensive line, but you're also dealing with just incredible athletes, size, speed ratio in the SEC. So he knows what it's like to have to absorb, I think, darn close to NFL contact at the D-line linebacker level. And he broke a ton of tackles. So I'm with you. I think it's a, hey, clean sweep. Go the over.
And I'll do one more. And then if anyone else has one, please throw it out. Rashad Bateman. Okay. First round pick of the Ravens. A lot of conversation that he is going to be exactly what they needed to get their passing game going. Well, according to this over under, I'm not totally buying it. 15.5 catches, 700 yards, 3.5 TDs.
Ooh, 3.5. That's mean.
I'll go push. I think that you nailed that. Yeah, I think push. You nailed the exact line.
You keep the.
He's going to have 15.5 catches.
Oh, man.
I think I'd go under two, at least for the yards and the catches. That's that. I feel like 650 yards and 45 catches would be a success for a rookie receiver in that system. Come in, be part of the solution, and you don't have to light the world on fire.
I feel like if I take the under, I'm going to be attacked for negative Lamar Jackson commentary. So and I don't feel like getting attacked. I'm already going to get attacked by the anti-vaxxers. I don't want to get two groups coming after me after this podcast. So I'll go over. Lamar Jackson can now throw outside the numbers as accurate as any quarterback in history. I'm going over.
To be fair, Hollywood Brown, 584 yards and 7 touchdowns his rookie season, 769 and 8 his second. I think maybe Bateman is viewed a little more complete than that. So I think you set the number right around, right where it should be.
I'll take the over.
All right. There you go. Anybody have one to throw out themselves?
I have one. Two quick Dan-esque ones because you were nice enough to offer them to us. So you can just, you don't have to analyze it. Just go over under. Landon Dickerson, your boy. Over under, Eagle 2 center. Sacks allowed.
Oh, 2 sacks allowed.
How else do we judge these guys?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't think he's going to allow any sacks out of the pivot in Philly this year over 17 starts.
All right. How about this? Robert Saleh. This has to be captured on broadcast network footage. 222 fist bumps during the regular season. Over, under.
222. So that's, you know, a little over...
How many? Yeah, what's
in a week? You know, 12 a week or something. That's a pretty big number. He might get injured. So I'm going to go under. Yeah.
The camera found its way to Saleh more often than any other player on the 49ers during his final couple seasons there. So I think the cameras will be trained on Saleh. I think the Jets defense isn't going to be good enough this year. They didn't address the ball, that side of the ball. I think it's going to be a little bumpy as they try to figure some things out. So I'm going to go with the under there. Not enough to fist bump about.
How about over under? Well, it's not really an over under. It's an either or. Your boy Wilson has got more interceptions than touchdowns, or more touchdowns than interceptions.
Ooh,
Zach Wilson, by the way.
I mean, I'm going to go. Well, go ahead, Dan. This is personal.
I know where you're going, Greg. Let's see. I'm so conditioned to the failure at this position that I would guess what's going to probably happen is he's going to have an up and down season. He's going to have plenty of doubts around him, but I just want to live in the realm of optimism. I'm going to say he's going to go positive.
Okay.
Also, you've got a Mike LaFleur offense that came from the brain of Kyle Shanahan, which is a quarterback friendly. You're not going to put quarterbacks into worlds of total chaos. It would be a huge disappointment if he threw more picks than touchdowns. So I just, I can't see that world. Touchdowns over picks.
It's 2021. It's hard to do that at this point. And Josh Allen did it his rookie season. He had more interceptions, but it's pretty rare. I mean, when that happens to a veteran like Jameis, it's like you become a punchline. So I'm going to say no. The NFL is too hard to throw that many interceptions. I think he'll be fine.
An accurate quarterback, too, we're talking about.
I just think about
it. Go 19 and 13 or something like that.
I was going to say, like, their backup, we just talked about this last week. Their backup quarterback right now is like Delta Burke. I don't even know if they have a backup quarterback on the roster.
I don't know if you guys knew this, by the way. Delta Burke's still alive.
Still alive. Still with us.
Do we throw in Mac Jones over under? I'm going to set it at 7.5. Maybe that's too low, but I don't care. I'm going what I'm rooting for. I really think they're going to try to make this work with Cam Newton, and they're only going to go to Mac Jones if it is truly not going well, which is certainly possible after watching last year's offense.
Going over.
You're going over.
I just don't believe in almost any veteran quarterback when a first round quarterback is being brought onto the roster, and I don't believe that we're going to get Cam Newton from 4 years ago.
Right, just because they added a couple tight ends. He threw 8 touchdown passes last year. This cannot be understated, overstated. 8 touchdowns in 15 starts in the NFL in 2020.
It's almost
That's
impossible.
Wild.
Yeah, it is almost. Oh, I got one more. Let's go. You can't do better season. I think that's too tough. But who has better numbers, Devontae Smith or Jaylen Waddle?
I'd go Smith for sure. I think better opportunity.
I mean, you got Hurts versus Tagovailoa.
Yeah, that's fair. But there's more mouths to feed in Miami. And Waddle seems like he's going to be more like a big playmaker. Devontae Smith maybe catches some more short routes. He looks like the number one in Philly, whereas Waddle's fighting. I like that.
Yeah, I'll go Smith. I mean, you could argue for either. I'm going Smith.
Smith is the call for me too. Yeah, I think they're gonna really work to make that the wide receiver prospect that actually plays out how the Eagles want to. Whereas maybe it's gonna take some time down in Miami. And I'm also like not sold on Tua. I know that's not a very popular opinion, but
it's not.
I'm kind of with you, Dan. I
feel like that's a totally popular opinion. He was totally buried all last season. There was very few people. There was a lot.
You guys are going to get attacked. Shad's going to come slice your scalps for that one.
I just think there were reasons for the excuses, and they were all valid for the most part. So I'm not like killing him saying he can't play, but it's just like that was not a fun guy to watch as a rookie. The assumption that a few months of the calendar passes and some other players are involved, all of a sudden he's going to be dynamic. Maybe it will be. We got to see it.
Yep. I'm out. Right. I'm out if anybody else has any.
I'm all set. Anybody else?
I'm good.
All right, real quick. All right, I got one more. Sorry, I know I said I was out. Over under. Podcast hosts that have a cornhole board hanging on their wall. I'm gonna set it at 1.5. Over under.
Any podcast,
any podcast host anywhere in their home, not like a studio where they do the podcast from, but
this is my house.
It is in their home, a cornhole board hanging on their wall.
Confidently going over because, I mean, I don't know what kind of a it could be anyone with a podcast and they call themselves the host of it. We only need to find one more on the entire globe for that to be.
But you got
to
find
if you guys listen to the show and you host a podcast and you have a cornhole board on your wall, let us know.
There we go.
Yeah. I'm going over.
Taking it over comfortably. Just think about like the Midwest alone. All I would imagine are thousands of college football podcasts.
we were down.
Gotta be cornhole boards everywhere.
It's supposed to be played. It's not a decoration. It's
nothing's. No, that's not fair. This is what's great about it. It's functionality. I just used it a week ago. I just pulled it off the board, took it out front, threw some bags, put it back. So not only is it decoration. It's getting mileage.
That's like, money. You could go play the records behind you on a record player if you needed to. So
I think it would ruin your stylus. I think you would immediately be at the record store for news.
And by the way,
they do have lines in them. I almost wonder if it is an exact
replica. That would be cool. Just crack it open.
Yeah, there's 6 tracks on the front side, and there are 6 tracks there. So I don't know.
I think there's only one way to find that. And by the way, it's also a nod money to the great Chris Wessling.
Yes.
Who introduced us to cornhole. And also, it should be noted that the GoFundMe for the Wessling family, Lakeisha and Link, is hitting the $300,000 mark. And that is a testament to all the amazing fans of this show and everyone who loved Wes. So that is great. And it's still out there. If you want to hit it, you can find it on our social media accounts. And thank you to everyone that's contributed. That is awesome. 300K. Kidding me?
Fantastic.
That's not for you, Mark. Stay away from it, okay?
Nor am I attempting to take hold of it. I'm very glad where it's going. So
we got to play some bags, you know, this offseason. Mark and I were down at Colleen and Gonzo's. There's a movement. They don't like the name cornhole. They just call it like, you know, bags or bag-o.
Bag is the Chicago term.
Yeah, I think that, like all those, all Gonzo's Philly friends, you know, they all call bag-o. Bag-o.
Bag-o, yeah. Chicago, bag-o. It's bags. I never knew.
Bags. But either way, I like the idea of bags. I like the idea of bags. The name cornhole, it's a fair point.
Everyone's so like worried about saying something offensive. Everyone's taking it to a certain place, I think, with cornhole. It's not that thing. It's a different thing.
But you knew that thing first. You knew that first. So
I don't know. I don't
cancel
know.
Dan.
I would say consult Beavis and Butthead. That would be.
Okay. I don't know. You're going to have to explain that one to me, Dan. Maybe you could do it right now.
What do the Philadelphians call it?
Bag-o.
Throwing bean?
Bag-o.
Oh, please.
Play some bag-o.
Big thumbs down on that.
Bags. Bag. I like bags. Bags is good.
Toss some corn. Throw some corn.
All right. Throw some corn. Okay. Well, I know where you can find a board if you need one.
Hit me up. Money, you've said it all. And we love when you're on the show.
Always love it. Anytime, guys.
Appreciate and now you got Petros and Money's coming up, right?
All good. Yeah. Every day.
And I believe we have the power
like, Money's like, I'm scheduled to talk for 3 hours today. That's not enough. I want, or four hours.
Four today, 3 to 7.
Let's try to find another couple hours where I can.
Money, I believe we have power rankings on NFL Network this week as well.
We do Thursday, I believe. Yes. The old Zeuser going to make the debut. And I will serve as his foil.
Find us on the dial.
That's what makes good TV.
Please battle him. He's put the Jets at number 8, and I find that to be a little bit out of bounds.
I'm with you. I said, Dan, that's way too low. They're a top 5 team for me. That's why I'm wearing the green today, because I'm a big Jets believer.
There we go. All right, good stuff. All right, we'll be back, like Greg said, Wednesday. We're just going to have some fun. We got the schedule release dropping, so we're going to have some analysis on that, including revenge games. And Greg, you gave me a good idea for an NFL.com piece that I have to write. Spicy revenge with the Bills involved. So be back Wednesday. Check us out. NFL Network show back Friday. And yes, me and Money on Power Rankings on Thursday. A lot coming up. Stan Hansen is signing off for Quiet Storm, the old boss, Money. Star of the hit Microseg, Money on Money. And of course, Ricky Hollywood behind the glass. Till Wednesday. Dr. Santa.
Konya Santa.